The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Now we're joined in Studio 10 by country music star Sandy Kelly.
Hi Ray, thank you for the invite.
A longtime friend of Brendan Grace and well-known snorer.
According to Philomena Begley.
She outed you?
She outed me live on The Late Late Show. Yep.
How did that come up in conversation?
Because we always share a room. If we work together,
yes.
Because we're such great friends, we share a room. And she just kept going on and on and on over the years about my snoring. And then one day, thankfully, she not able to work a recorder. She tried to record me on her phone while I was asleep. And we're on The Late Late Show and she outed me. So yeah. Every person I met for the next month talked about my snoring.
Have you tried to get it sorted over the years?
No, sure, I'm single. Why would I bother?
Okay.
Sure, I'm not annoying anybody except Philomena Begley. Yeah. And I don't intend to marry her, so.
Right. And she probably deserves to be annoyed a little bit sometimes. Yeah, yeah.
She's great. By the way, wishing her a speedy recovery. You know, she had heart surgery in May. So wishing her all the best. She's one of my best buddies.
Great, great. And she is recovering.
Oh, she's recovering very well, but just has to rest.
Yeah, okay. Now, people who tuned in to Brendan Grace, thanks for the memories last week, would have seen you.
Mm-hmm.
You were out with the Forget Me Nots choir and you sang at the concert, so we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, just let's talk about your friendship with Brendan. It goes back a long, long way.
A long way. I can't even remember the first time that we met. The only way I can pinpoint a time, it was prior to 30 years ago, when he had the show Live from the Olympia. And I would have been one of the guests on that show with my band Live. And then we just started a friendship. And to be honest with you, he was probably closer and more friendly to my late sister Barbara. And they had a wonderful friendship. Down through the years,
and Barbara was a singer as well.
Barbara used to sing with me. She was on my TV show. She did the Eurovision 1982. And she was very much part of everything I did. And so she would have worked with Brendan any time I did. You know, she would have been there. But then he started calling to the house. He'd come with Brian, his road manager, if you like. And one of the memories I have of him is years and years and years ago, if I wasn't working, he'd call to the house and he'd stay over en route to somewhere or up on the way back. And my house wasn't very posh, Ray, compared to Brendan's house, you know. And one of the nicest things he did that I remember was he sent Brian to get takeaway cheeseburgers. And back then, there was no such thing as takeaway cheeseburgers, you know. And I remember that. And I can't remember how many Brendan had, but it was several.
Right.
And I remember if his van was parked outside our house, you know, it was like Elvis was staying in our
local. Because he was so popular.
He was huge.
Yeah.
But what a kind, wonderful man he was. I mean, he reached out to so many people.
And I was saying that any time we mentioned him on the radio over the years, you'd get a little handwritten card a couple of weeks later saying thanks for the mention, you know.
Very few
Butler
people do
Brendan.
That.
Yeah.
And you know, the other person that I would have remembered doing that was somebody I worked with a long time as well, George Hamilton IV. And he believed in real mail, not email.
Yes.
And he did the same. And after Barbara passed away this week, 1 year ago, Brendan sent me a lengthy, beautiful, very comforting letter, just like that.
So this is a tough week for you. It's the year anniversary.
It's a tough week, but, you know, I'm so grateful that Brendan asked me to be part of this project. Little did I know just how special it would be in meeting the Forget Me Nots choir. Brian Redden, who's the producer, I don't know if you know Brian.
I know Brian, yes.
What a wonderful, I'd never met him, what a wonderful man.
Yeah.
And he had a great connection, almost like father and son, with Brendan. And I could see while we were filming and starting the project how much Brian looked after Brendan and cared about him. So although it's a difficult week for me, it's been a great week in a very nice way. I was hosting a luncheon yesterday for 350 ladies for breast cancer awareness. So I decided rather than sit at home, I would keep busy. And here I am talking to you today and it's all, you know, it's all nice.
Well, you know, Brendan, there's no doubt that he was one in, you know, 10 million. There was something
exceptionally
special about him.
I mean,
and it wasn't just that he could sing and he could make people laugh. There was more to it than that.
It was his heart and his kindness. And Eileen, his wife, is the same. You know, they're just wonderful people. And I suppose you might think it's an odd comparison, but I can only compare people as I meet them and as I've known them and been lucky enough to work with them. And he was so like Johnny Cash in his kindness and, you know, that different person who reached out and cared about other people. You know, wasn't really about the music. It wasn't really about the comedy. Of course, that was a great part of their lives, but it was who they were as people, as human beings.
And you can see, I know you haven't watched the documentary yet.
No, I'll tape it. It's just the week that's in it and everything.
Yes, yes.
And even doing the concert the week before last was all...
all very emotional.
It was emotional, but it was great. You know, it wasn't tragic. It was great. And because Brendan and Barbara were so close, I think this is a lovely way to remember her as well.
And you've lost both of them within a year.
Yes. Yes, and it's a nice way to... They were such upbeat people. I want to remember them like that, as I'm sure everybody does. And interestingly, at the concert last week, you know, we were all like, oh, my God, how are we going to get through this? Because Brendan was there on screen from 30 years ago, thanks to Brian Redden, introducing us as artists. So I said, how the hell am I supposed to go out there and sing with the choir? What a beautiful world, you know. But he made us laugh all night from the screen. And, you know, he kept our spirits up and he was larger than life. Even his family, Eileen and the children, we were all laughing as well as crying, you know. And that's special, isn't it?
Yeah, and watching you last week, because you're featured and they showed a clip of you from Live at the Olympia. From all those years ago in your skinny jeans. You were giving it socks.
That's what Brian Redden said. He said you were painted into those jeans. As you can see, I haven't changed much.
And that was live on a Sunday night.
Live on a Sunday night with the band and all. But you're way back then, most things were live. When I had my TV series back in the early 90s.
Was that live too?
It was in front of a live audience. But there was no water cue. And Brendan Balfe used to write my links, and you know, I'm not the most educated person in the world. I certainly didn't have a college degree, so a lot of times I was asking people questions and I didn't know what the hell I was asking them. I just memorized it and just, you know, went for it. Hope for the best. So everything's different.
So you were in the music business right from an early age, weren't you?
From the day I was born. I was carried on stage as a baby to be a baby in plays or sketches. And then from the age of 3, 7 nights a week, I sang, tap danced.
And your parents were in the business?
Yeah, Fit Up Roadshows.
Yeah,
you're too young to remember that, are you?
No, I know of them. We were talking to somebody about them recently, actually.
Yeah, and that was my life, the Dusky Family
Roadshow. We were talking to John Kenny about them, actually.
Yes, because he would have had an input as well. Yeah, we had a roadshow, my grandfather and grandmother and my father, his siblings, and all of us. And I toured with that show 7 nights a week as a magician's assistant, singer, tap dancer, part in plays, till I was 9.
Right.
And then I retired because the authorities came after my parents.
For child labour?
Well, to get an education. Yeah. But sure, by the time I went to school in Ballintore, I could sell sand to the Arabs. I was the most educated
person.
You'd been
to the University of Life,
I said, could certainly count money.
You should
take the money on the door with my grandfather, you know.
So you parked it then for a while and then went back to it?
Yeah, which was quite devastating because I went from being in show business and looking at people smiling at me and clapping every night, to my grandmother, who was wonderful, lived to the age of 106, but she ruled with an iron fist, and she decided she was going to, you know, chastise the singing out of me.
Right.
And send me to school and, you know, make me a real person.
That's a terrible phrase, chastise the singing out of you.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the way, you know, you do none of that singing now. And even right up to, you know, into her 90s, she'd say, are you still at that crack?
Right.
You know, because it was never thought of as a real job.
No.
And a real person. And of course, when my mum ran away with my dad and married him and ran off with the show, that was a disgrace. You know, she disgraced the whole family. Although they were poor themselves, my father's family were like somewhere less than that, you know.
Because it wasn't seen as a real job or...
No, and I think there was a stigma attached to living in caravans.
Yes,
You know, and some years ago, RTÉ done a documentary on me just prior to the TV series I had, and they asked me what would I like to call it, and I said I'd like to call it The Showman's Daughter, because that's what I was always referred to when I went to school. And so I went looking for my birth cert. I don't know why people do that. You tend to go back to that, and it says father's occupation,
showman. Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah,
showman.
So it made me sort of valid in a way to myself, and I've always been proud of where I come from and show Fit Up road shows.
Isn't it brilliant that you were part of that world that doesn't exist anymore?
Yeah.
It was a very different world, wasn't it?
I'm writing a book at the moment, which I took a little bit of time off after Barbara passed away, but I'm writing a book about that side of my history. And, you know, that's to me more magical than the years that came later. You know, having a TV show.
Well, I suppose everybody knows that You know, the TV and people know that. It's, yeah. But the fit-ups is something that...
And they assume, funny enough, that when, say, I'm writing a book, that I'm going to write about that and about Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson and all of that. But it's not really that. It's about my childhood and the magic of that. Because although we were extremely poor and, you know, sometimes found it hard to have food, which many people did back then, I remember people paying on the door with eggs, fish... Chickens.
Really?
Oh, God, aye, if they didn't have any money.
So they'd drive up to see a show with half
potatoes,
those eggs.
Yeah, potatoes. And I remember we were in Achill for 3 weeks and somebody brought fish and my grandfather hung it on the back of the caravan and forgot about it till it started to stink.
Is that anything to do then with that present that Brendan Grace got for Barbara when she was in hospital?
Oh, my goodness.
Is that connected?
He arrived at Sligo General Hospital just after we did the Eurovision.
Right.
1982. We'd had a bad accident. She had spinal injuries, was in hospital, a body cast for 3 months. And Brendan and Grace arrives in. Honestly, Ray, you'd think Elvis Presley was in the building. I mean, he was such a huge star with this beautiful box all nicely parcelled and bows and everything. And I opened it for her because she couldn't. Her eyes were popping out of her head. And it was a box of potatoes, unwashed, uncooked. And just everybody started roaring laughing, you know. Just that was him, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was him.
So you went to school and then you sort of reignited the showbiz career then at what stage?
Well, the first thing I thought might be a good idea was I joined the choir because my grandmother couldn't disapprove of that. Mm-hmm. But I have a very low voice, as you know. And the choir leader took exception to the fact that I couldn't sing in the same range as the girls. I always seemed to be singing with the boys. So that didn't go great for me. And so then I decided I'd enter the Fetius. And I had a wonderful musical teacher by luck in the National School, Miss Dowling Long, and she would keep me in after school every day to train me, to train my voice and how to use my diaphragm and stuff like that. And my first TV show she drove me to, I was 11, and it was Shoshagus Barkley. Do you might remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
It was an Irish programme, as you can imagine, and I was brought up here to the canteen at 11 and I saw all these people from TV and I couldn't believe it. I was going around my little autograph book and that was my first TV appearance. So I, you know...
First of many, I didn't realise that.
It's like the night I met Johnny Cash, right? I thought I'd see him once and that'd be it.
I can't believe... Can I shake your hand? I shook the hand.
They touched
Johnny Cash. What an amazing...
You're not the first person to do that.
I won't be the last either. But what an amazing man.
Yeah.
What an amazing
but
man.
But there again, like Brendan Grace, very humble, very kind, did many kind acts for people without them even knowing it, you know, leaving money in... like wads of money in runners in, you know, places to play and there might be a changing room and the kids, the teenagers would have runners and he just put money in the runners and, you know, acts of kindness.
Yeah, yeah.
And a wonderful man.
And those albums he did when he was, you know, close to the end.
Yeah. I've just actually come back from Nashville. I'm doing my first album in 25 years.
Very exciting.
I was sort of coaxed and overly coaxed by my son, Willie Kelly.
Yeah.
And it's co-produced at Cash Cabin, where I would have been all those years ago, co-produced by Johnny's son, John Carter Cash, and my son, Willie Kelly. So that's a lovely project. It's to go with the book.
Yeah. And is it going to be originals or will you be
some originals, some copies, but all of them...
Will you be singing crazy on it?
No. but you know, they redid a mix of Woodcarver, the one I did with Johnny Cash. And so funny, it was kind of nerve-wracking really because when we were in the studio, you know, he was always kidding about and he was talking, we would be talking to each other and messing about. There was never anything between us like that, but just kidding about. And didn't it come up on the recording, all the chatting?
All right.
And there's my son and his son and I'm going, oh my God, what did we say? I'm trying to think back, what were we talking about? But anyway, they've left it on it.
The reason I mentioned crazy because I know Willie, your son, used to bring him on the road with you. And there came a point where he said, I can't listen to you sing crazy
He said to me, Mum, I used to bring Willie and his sister with special needs, Barbara, up until she was 18. And he said, Mum, I love you, but I cannot. He was my drummer. I can't play Crazy One More Time. And what makes you think my sister wants to listen to it one more time? So that was his way of sort of saying, and maybe it's a good time to mention Willie. He used to be with Rackhouse Pilfer. I don't know if you remember
them.
Yes,
I do, yeah.
And they were very successful. But just now for the last 2 years, he's co-producing Sligo Live. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Yeah.
They've had this year, they have Joe's Holland, Des Bishop.
So it's a festival. It's a
huge festival. It starts at the end. I'm taking a week out to go to all the shows to be a groupie.
Right.
You know?
And so that's his job now, Willie's job.
It's himself and Rory O'Connor co-produced that. And it's a year long preparation and their 9-to-5 job. Of course, he gets to spend more time with my grandson, which is very important to me. And I'm looking forward to going on the 26th to the arena, the Knocknarea Arena, to see about one of your favourites, the Indigo Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Do you like the Indigo Girls?
Closer to Fine.
Closer to Fine.
What
oh,
an
my
amazing
God.
Song.
I'm going to be such a groupie.
We'll have to play that tomorrow. We'll have to play that tomorrow.
Will
then.
You? That would be great.
The reason you're here is because I met you in the reception of the radio centre.
With Barbara.
With Barbara.
On her birthday.
On her birthday, yeah.
On her birthday. That was so wonderful, you know.
Does she mind if I say what age she is?
Barbara's 38, but yeah. Does she look it? Not
no.
At all. But she lunged at you and gave you a
yes.
Big hug.
Okay.
She feels like she knows you, you see, because she's watching.
It was a lovely hug, yeah. Lovely
she
hug.
Gives the best hugs. But it was so funny. I was recording with the concert orchestra, as one does on a Monday, and they played Happy Birthday to her. So you have the RTE Live Concert Orchestra playing Happy Birthday, and all she does is roll her eyes up and go, oh, my God, you know, whatever.
You
know.
You were saying she's special needs.
Yes.
So she's working at what level?
6 to 8 years old on a lot of subjects. We still have Santa Claus and
right.
All of that. But then on other subjects, I mean, she's very sensitive. She processes things in a different way than we do. Having a child with special needs is a gift. Sometimes miracles hide. And although it's a shock initially, it can make you a different family, a better family. Mm. We think kind of differently than, say, families with normal children, because we have to. But is it a challenge? Absolutely. It's a huge challenge every day.
And I was reading there that at 50 you had sort of a bit of a health scare.
Mm-hmm.
And it made you think differently about Barbara's future.
It did, because we see, I think when you're a mother of a special child, and I'm only speaking for myself, you have a huge amount of guilt, because you go over, Barbara was born with a cyst in her brain, a third the size of her brain. And it wasn't diagnosed for about 2 months. And I went through an awful period of, what did I do while I was pregnant? Did I do, because I wasn't drinking, I wasn't smoking. But what did I do, you know? And I think mothers do that. They search themselves, their own souls first. And so I was very overprotective of her. When it came then to the time that I got sick, and I almost had a stroke, from all the pressure, you know, I decided, well, what if I did have a stroke?
Mm.
What would happen to Barbara? And there are still many families out there, elderly parents, whom have our parent.
It's heartbreaking.
That have a child with special needs at home. Much
in
more
their 50s,
needy.
In their 50s. Or
yeah. I'm 65, almost 66. Some of them are in their 80s.
Yes, and what I'm saying is their children are
their
children, 50s.
Yeah,
yes.
Sorry, that's
yes,
right.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen when that parent passes on or becomes ill, or I become ill and pass on?
It's a big question, isn't it?
Well, I've given Barbara very reluctantly, because most, and her carers are wonderful. She's in the resource centre in Sligo, and they're wonderful. It took me a long time to trust anybody. And I would let her go in for one night a month. And after 3 hours of her being out of the house, I'd go and collect her. I couldn't trust anybody, you know. Now, you know, she's there today. She's listening to you, I think. And
hey, Barbara.
She's great. She's fantastic. And so it's wonderful, because if something happens to me, she has her second family.
Mm.
You know, she has her second home and some independence from me. You know, not to be overprotective of her. And she's coming up to see me tomorrow.
I'm conscious now that she's listening, because I'm interested to know how, you know, she would have dealt with Brendan's loss.
She was devastated.
And her auntie Barbara's loss.
Devastated. She processes death and grief in a totally different way than we do. And her way of processing it, first of all, she can't understand why it happened. Then she becomes very, very sad. She would go to my sister's grave on a weekly basis with her carer. She would cry a lot and talk about it constantly. Why? Looking for answers. Where are they now? And then she has this idea in her head that my dad and his second wife and my sister and Brendan and my mum, who was my dad's first wife, are all in a pub in heaven. And they're all having a drink.
Yeah.
And of course they are.
Yeah.
And they're all having a sing-song. And so she has this. And she's very sad about it, you know, but she processes it differently. Am I talking too much?
No.
It seems like I'm talking a lot.
You're not at all. God, no. Sandy is a lady to her fingertips. She used to come into Beverly Hills in Castlebar and always brought it low with her, says Siobhan. I have to say that the likes of Sandy and her showband colleagues and entertainers of their era are very humble. Thanks for all the joy. And what a wonderful lady, Sandy Kelly. She's coming to Mayo on 27 October to Ireland West Airport, knock to launch the local parish Kilkelly Kilmovie magazine. Did you know that? We're all looking forward to seeing her.
Singing a few songs.
Yeah, that's best of luck. That's from Kilkelly Kilmovie magazine. Lovely to listen to Sandy Kelly, and so sad about her sister Barbara, as those of us who have lost a sibling can identify with her. She's a wonderful singer and entertainer. I'm wishing her the best of luck in life.
And
you're still processing Barbara's death.
I am. I think the way I took 6 months off, and I think the way that I'm getting through it, as Sandy, Barbara's daughter, is a new CD. She only went back 3 weeks ago since her mum passed away. And of course, she moved in with me when her mum passed away. And she's doing drama and English, and she's a wonderful singer. My daughter, then I've got my grandson, Frank. I've got a lot to be doing.
Yeah.
And I'm busy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm off to Scotland next month on a tour, and then I'm off to Nashville to finish the album and on a tour for 3 weeks. So I'm hoping that I'm pushing it to the back somewhere. I hope that's not happening. Do you know how that can...
Yes,
you know, everybody asks me, are you all right?
And then you think you're all right.
Yeah.
And then at some stage.
I hope there's not a day coming up where, like, I'm going to... It's not that I don't cry and all of that. Of course I do. And I dream about her constantly. Mm. Constantly.
Mm. And you'll write about her in the book.
Oh, yes. Not the paragraph I wanted to write.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, because I'd already started writing about her, you know. But going back to the... if you don't mind me talking about the choir.
No, go on.
I've had a wonderful relationship with them, thanks to Brendan. And we hope to continue that on a very personal level.
And you're becoming an ambassador, and you're in contact with Laura Owen and all that,
I'm
which is brilliant.
I'm in contact with them, and they've made me an honorary member, and I have my scarf. And dementia, I suppose, I don't want to get into talking too much about it, because although my father had dementia, I'm not a big expert on it. But there is a play, if anybody is out and about, written, produced and directed by a guy called Tommy Maron. It's called The Three Marys. And it's touring Ireland. It's at Lone Wednesday. And they deal with this in a very unique and respectful way, but bringing that humour into it.
Yes.
That inevitably...
No, we had Rory Cowan on the show on Saturday night, and his mum died from dementia.
My dad did too, yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, in the book, there's a paragraph on the early days of her dementia.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite funny, you know.
Ray, my dad was in a nursing home called Somerville in Strandhill, right on the coast where I live. And he was convinced that it was a hotel and I owned it.
Right.
Now, I could hardly afford to buy a house, never mind buy a hotel. And he would go around at night switching off the lights in the rooms and telling them Kelly was not paying
for the electricity.
And then the other patients, dementia and Alzheimer's, he'd go around and tell them they hadn't settled up their account.
When
their family would come in, they'd be hell to play,
yeah,
because they were thinking they were going to be turfed out.
Right.
Because that, so it does have an element of humour.
Yes, it
and
does,
that's
yeah.
what gets you by, isn't it?
Now, I know you're taping the three documentaries. It started last week. The second one's on tonight. And tonight is as I heard Brian Redden actually on with Sean O'Rourke this morning, saying it's a tough watch. And I've seen it, and it is a tough watch, because they were in Brendan's room 3 days before he died.
Yes.
And it's very tough. But yet it's uplifting as well because of the choir. And then next week, I think it's all the concert.
It's the concert, which is wonderful, because, as I say, he's there, you know, larger than life. But also, as I was standing there looking, it's a variety show, which we never see.
Yeah, you don't see anymore.
There was comedy, there was sketches, there were songs from musicals, there was country music, there was pop. Mm. It was a variety show, which we don't see.
And the other thing that features tonight is Brendan's funeral, which you were at, and his four children spoke so eloquently, well. Like
so much dignity. Yep. Eileen and the family, and you know, in a way, they brought us all to a level where we were all dignified.
Yeah.
And I mean, we lost Brendan Grace. They lost their father. Eileen lost her other half, her husband.
And I can't remember the daughter's name, which daughter
Ashling?
Was. But she said that he was a legend in showbiz, but he was a legend of a dad.
And I'm sure he was. You know.
Lovely to hear Sandy. Lovely lady. We always enjoyed performing with her. Mary Burke and Crystal Swing. And great to hear Sandy on the radio. Remember the Dusky Road Show in Ballymote back in the 1950s. And can you ask Sandy what year she represented Ireland? You said it already.
1982.
Yes.
Yeah.
I danced on the Late Late Show as a young one and met her just before the Eurovision. And I'd love to know when that was, 1982. And Sandy is one of the kindest ladies I know. She is modest And when I asked her to contact a friend who was ill, without hesitation, she agreed. She's an angel and a very darling woman. That's Nicole. And a lovely lady. Played the Sevenoaks Carlo on Sunday nights back in the day. Would spend ages after shows sitting in kitchen talking to staff. We've something in common.
That's our life.
I did the disco in the, Sevenoaks for about 10 years. Every Friday night.
I used to do Christmas.
Oh, I used to do Christmas. There you go. We've something in common.
It's fantastic.
That was a real pleasure chatting to you, Sandy.
Oh, thank you.
Mind yourself.
Do you mind if I mention where I'm going after I'm talking to you?
You're going to Castleblaney.
I'm going to see Raymond up in the Hooley in the Old Coach Inn.
Right.
And then Wednesday, we have a very special concert down in Navan in the Ardboyne with Jerry Guthrie, Olivia Douglas, a host of stars.
Right. So tonight, Castleblaney, and then Wednesday night in Navan.
The Ardboyne in Navan. With Jerry Guthrie. Thank you so much, Ray.
Sandy.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.